flyers to the neighborhoods and stuff, and so he kind of kept us busy all the time. There was 8 of us, and the first 5 were the ones that were the most active.
Now, he said he kept you busy. I mean, did he incorporate the work and the family? I mean, how did he work out?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was real important to him.
Could you do me a favor? One thing is, when if you can incorporate my question, so like, you know, family was, you know, so we know whether you're talking about family.
All right.
Now, was, I mean, how was he able to work in his work and the family and all that?
Well, I think the thing he did with us is that he involved us in everything and the time that we had. Like our summers, I remember spending working with him, and you know, the holidays, and just after school, helping out as much as we could. But he always involved the family. You know, he's always been like that. Even when he started the union, it became one big family. It wasn't just his immediate family, meaning us, the kids. It was the farm workers and everyone else who supported, kind of brought everyone together.
Now, in a previous conversation that either you or your sister Liz mentioned that I don't remember being alone with my father. You know, he seemed to belong to everyone. I mean, how do you feel about that, feeling of belonging to everyone?
Well, I guess we that's all we knew. You know, we shared him all our lives, and I mean, I think it was kind of natural to us. Always my dad. I mean, he was always involved in something, whether it was a CSO or farm workers or whatever. There was always someone around, and he took us along, and so it just became part of what we, every day that we knew. You know, just being with him and being with other people and sharing him. You know, I mean, I didn't know it any other way.
Stuff is
trains on its way. Trains on its way, and
they're hammering.
Rolling.
Marker.
Age, and so we knew that we shared him with everyone. You know, it was like when he started the union, he was always around farm workers, and even the work he did in the CSO, we kind of just always did things.
Resentment, though?
No, I don't think there was. I don't, that on my part, and I don't think on my brothers and sisters either. I think we just grew up that way. And the little time that he did spend with us, the private time, was little, but it was, you know, precious times that were remembered.
So when your dad would go off to L.A. or to Bakersfield or wherever and take you guys, what did he do? Did he make an event or what?
Yeah, he. It was enjoyable, not just the work, but that, you know, we got some fun out of it.
Was he easy to talk to?
Yeah, he was. He was. It was. I found, and I think they got to know him more in a different way. You know, it was their tata. You know, and so it was a little different.
Do you remember that if he had any special times, were there special times of the year that he set aside just for the family or that was something special for him? Do you remember?
Yeah, there were certain holidays that he really looked forward to, and in fact he planned. Christmas was one of those days. He made that an event for us. It was a traditional thing that we did. We got together at my mother's and made tamales, and of course he was there sticking his hands in the masa and stuff. And midnight mass was a thing that we did as a family. We went to midnight mass, and then after mass we'd all come and to my parents' house, and then we'd exchange gifts, and we did that. That was an annual thing we did, and then we'd have a Christmas dinner. So it was kind of like he brought the family. That's the one time the family would come together, especially after we all grew up and everyone moved out. It was one of those times that we all got together. Another special time was Easter. Easter was a real important day for my dad, or a holiday rather. We'd start off with an early Easter mass, and then we'd have an Easter egg hunt, and then we'd have a big baseball game with all the grandkids and everyone in the community. And of course, he was always the pitcher. You know, he's the one that kept score and everything, kept the game going, kept it.
A sense of tradition, was that important to him?
Oh, yeah, I think it was. I think it was. I think what he taught us, you know, we now teach our kids. At the time, you know, we made a fuss about tradition and stuff, but I think that's something that that we learned and that we now teach our kids, you know. It was important to him.
Why do you think it was important?
I think the values, you know, and the morals and just the things that they said, like he was very religious and he made it a point that we always went to mass and we made a fuss about it all the time, but you know, we find that we're the same way. I'm the same way with my children. Oh, we got to go to Mass, everybody get ready. So it's those things, you just, I don't know, it's just something that, you know, we just carry on.
What about, I know this is hard to answer, but in your perception of your father and your mother, were they, when it came to the movement, came to the family, were they on the same level? I mean, were they fighting together?
Yeah, she supported my dad from the beginning. In fact, when he decided that he wanted to go organize farm workers, he asked her what area would she like to go to, because he knew it was going to be hard on her. And she chose Delano because she had family there. She had two sisters and she had two brothers who lived nearby, and she figured that if we needed help, that she'd have her family nearby. And yeah, she helped him all the way. In fact, she worked for the union full time. She started the first credit union, and she worked there till she retired, I guess about maybe 5 years ago. She ran the whole thing.
Now, in terms of... Still rolling. Okay. You said that he was closer, or was closer to the grandkids than he was to you. I mean, what evidence do you have of them?
The kids could go to him and talk to him all the time, and he spent a lot of time with them, and he invited them to a lot of places he went to. When we were growing up, he wasn't home as much, because of the organizing that he did with the CSO and then later on with the union. But when we moved to La Paz, you know, there was still a lot of traveling, but he was here more often, you know, and so the kids all, I know my daughters worked in his office, so they spent a lot of time with him. They became very close, built a real good relationship with him.
Now, when you were a kid, you know, you moved from L.A. and over to Delano. What was life like for you and your siblings growing up as Cesar Chavez's kids? When you had you're going to school with growers' kids, what was that like?
Oh gosh, well, in the early years of the union was pretty tough for us, for the five older kids.
Oh, sorry. We'll do that one again. I thought I heard the click. I'm sorry. This is weird. How do you feel?
Camera roll 4, take 3.
Daughter. Well, I don't know any different, you know, just that he's my dad. We grew up that way. I remember when the union first started, there were problems because it was a new thing, you know, people were scared. But for us, growing up there and going to school, and having to go to school with the growers' kids and the labor contractors' children was difficult. We were harassed a lot. You know, the town was kind of divided, you know, those who were for the union, those who were against. But my brother Fernando, the oldest, I think probably had it the toughest.
Yeah. Why?
Well, I mean, he was picked on a lot by the growers' kids. In fact, he got into a fist fight one time.
Now, there was a story I think I heard you tell one time that you couldn't possibly be Cesar Chavez's kids. Can you tell that story?
In one of my classes, and a teacher, it was a history class, I remember clearly, I was wearing a button, and the teacher asked me if he could wear that button. And I told him I'd give him the button only if he would wear it in class, and he said he would, so he put it on. And the grower's kid was sitting there, and he got very upset and said, "No, you can't wear that button. You know, that's against the law. You can't do that. You can't." They made a fuss about it. And then one of the kids said, "Well, you know, that's Cesar Chavez's daughter." And he made a remark. All his kids go to private schools in Switzerland, or some remark like that.
So what did you do? How did you...
I laughed. I thought, gosh, if they only knew. If they'd only come by and see where we live. There were some, like this teacher in particular, there were some teachers that were, you know, that were for the union and knew about the union and stuff, and there were some that just, I guess were a lot like the growers. I had a teacher who taught civics, I think it was, who said all year long, "We're gonna have to debate this issue about the UFW and, you know, the union and stuff," and we never did, but I know he never liked the union. I know that anytime I wore my button, he would make a remark and stuff. In fact, it was like that. The whole school board was like that because my sister and I had got called into the superintendent's office because we were wearing buttons. And they told us that if we didn't take the buttons off, we would be suspended. And we told them, well, you know, we had the right to wear the buttons and we weren't going to remove them. So they called my father. He happened to be in town. And he came to the school and they told him, well, we're going to have to suspend your children because they won't take off the buttons. He goes, well, you do what you have to, but, you know, that's what they believe in and they're not taking them off. So they told us we were suspended. My dad, we walked out of the office. My dad, we were getting in the car to leave. And the superintendent came back and he said, well, no, that they had made a mistake, that it was okay for us to wear our buttons and stuff. But my dad had gone down to the office there with a couple of attorneys, and I guess maybe that changed their mind.
Now, you had, over the years, a lot of people come through your lives, farm workers as well as, you know, important people in government. I mean, what was your perception of that as a kid, to have a Kennedys or somebody come through?
Well, the Kennedys, I mean, everyone knew the Kennedys, right, and still knows them. And I guess we were pretty excited about meeting them, I guess, because everyone else was, and they were so well-known and stuff, and they were just as tough, you know. I mean, we had people that came all the time and met with my dad or helped out or marched and stuff. And because it was just one of those things that it was just an everyday thing that we did, you know. It was part of growing up in the union, and that, you know, people just got involved because they believed in the union, and these people were here to help, just like the farm workers were. So it was kind of like that kind of thing.
Did you think your life was pretty normal?
Yeah, I did. I'm still doing it, you know, so it's kind of like, this is all I've ever known.
So do you think, you know, if my life had been different, you said this is all you've ever known, but I mean, can you perceive your life?
Well, I know this is what I wanted to do. I knew that for a long time because when I went on the boycott, that's where I met my husband, and I had told myself that I would have to marry someone who was going to be as dedicated as I was in the movement, because I was going to stay here. There was no way I was going to leave. And so when I met Artie, I found that he was more dedicated. I just chose to do that, you know.
No regrets?
No, not at all. In fact, if anything, I'm glad, you know, that I got to do all this, because it's something that I get to carry on to my children. You know, when I see them doing the same thing.
Well, tell me the story about when you and Artie decided to get married and you called your father. What happened?
Artie tells it best. I met Artie in Detroit, Michigan. I had gone down for it was the grape, gallo, and I think lettuce boycott. And it was back in 1973. It was the first boycott I had gone out to. And the only reason my dad let me go was because my older sister was going with her husband. It's kind of funny, though. But Artie had just graduated from the University of Michigan, and he'd come on staff, and he was organizing a region of the state. It was all broken down, and there was the state was divided into about, I guess, four or five different regions. And I met Artie there, and when we decided, and we started a date, and then when we decided to get married, he called my dad. I told him, you have to call my dad, and you have to ask for my hand in marriage. And he couldn't believe that, but I told him, yeah, you do. And he did. He called my dad. Yeah.
That's great. We're going to do that. We'll just start that.
Roll in.
Marker, take four.
Now, when you went on your first boycott, did you have to do some convincing of your father to do that?
Yeah, I did. I had always worked in the office there. I worked in his office right at high school. I went to work in with his assistant. I helped her out, and then I worked in the medical plan, and then I did some accounting. Well, when everyone was getting ready to go out on the great boycott, I thought, well, I want to do something different. I think I'll.
Sorry.
You want to stop?
It's a truck. That's a diesel we heard.
That's bad. Boycott?
Yes.
Cut.
You know what? He's
take five.
Was it tough to convince your dad to let you go on the first boycott?
Yeah, it took a little convincing. I had done a lot of work out in his office. I worked in my dad's office with his assistant, and then I did some work in the accounting department, and then I did some work in the membership. And I thought I wanted to do something different, so when the Great Boycott started and everyone was going out, I thought, well, this would be something different. Well, when I went to him and told him I wanted to go, he told me, well, I don't know if it, you know, if you should really be out there and stuff. And then when my sister and her husband, at that time, were both working for the organization, my brother-in-law at that time was a union organizer. So they were sending all the organizers out there. He goes, well, if Siv and George go, you can go. So Siv and George decided they'd go, so I got to go. That was my way out there.
And what happened when you got out there?
It was different. It was tough. It was the best experience I've ever experienced, but it was not easy at all. I don't know what I was expecting. I mean, it was tough work, you know, having to go and talk to different organizations and talk to the church and, you know, trying to convince people that you were there, that you needed their help and stuff. And I didn't know anything about organizing. I was afraid to get up and speak, and it was just like I was just thrown out there and said, all right, got to learn how to swim. And I guess that was my best teacher. But I met Artie out there, my husband. He had just graduated from the University of Michigan, and he was one of the organizers there. And we started dating, and then when we got a little serious, we decided we were going to get married, and I told him that he would have to call my dad and ask for my hand in marriage, which was a little shocking to him. And he did. He called my dad. He asked for for my hand in marriage. And my dad asked him, well, where are you planning to get married? He says, well, you know, you have to get married out here, meaning La Paz. And he says, yeah, we'll do that. We'll get married out there.
Was that something that was traumatic? Did that make you nervous? Was it kind of weird just calling up your dad and telling him to get married?
No, because I've got five sisters, and I had three sisters that had already gone through that, you know, and their husbands had to do the same thing. So I knew already how to do that.
Was your dad perceived as being tough? I mean, was he a tough guy?
In what sense?
I think I'm out of film, but I can't hear with you.
Let's stop. Yeah, let's stop.
I can hear the clip.
Marker, take six.
Camera roll six.
Your dad was no pushover to do the things that he did. What was your perception of him? Was he a tough guy?
Yeah, he could be. Yeah, he could be.
He could be
stop.
What?
Say my dad.
My dad
could be a tough guy.
Keep going.
My dad could be a tough guy, yeah. With us, though, he was, it was different with his kids, though, I think. I don't think he, I don't think of it as him being tough. I think of him just doing what he did as a father, you know? Like, he always stressed, if you start something, you've got to finish it, you know, whether you don't like what you're doing, but until you get the job done and that kind of stuff, but not like to the point where, you know, it was, you have to do it, and that kind of stuff, you know, just, but I guess you're right, you know, to build the union, you know, he had to be tough. I mean, you know, he really had to be tough.
Was it hard on your mom and on your family, all the time away and this, you know, all the things that he went through the past? I mean, was it hard on you kids and on your
mom? Yeah. As we got older, you know, we understood more. And yeah, it was hard. The last fast was very hard on everyone. You know, we're all worried. We're very concerned. You know, he had a doctor there all the time with him, but yet, you know, we seen him every day. Every day before he went to the mass, we'd walk into his room and just to see him, you know, he looked like he was deteriorating, and it was scary. I mean, the grandkids were very upset, and I know that Artie was very concerned, and some of the other board members. But it took a toll on us that fast, yeah, and probably on my mom, probably the hardest. But she seemed to be the strongest, though. I mean, she's always kind of been by his side, but she's always been the one that's been the one that's kind of helped everyone through it, like with the family. And even with, I remember during the fast, even sometimes when the farm workers would come up and be very upset, and my mother was there, you know, it'll be fine, you know, kind of just comforting them.
Did anybody ever try to talk him out of fasting or doing something like that?
No, I don't think so. I think he had his mind set and he knew exactly how long he was going to fast. Not that I know of. I don't think anybody did.
What about your Uncle Richard? Was your family close to your Uncle Richard?
Very close. In fact,
if you include Richard.
In fact, my Uncle Richard's family and our family grew up together. We would take trips together and vacation together, and his kids always helped out. They were always with us on the weekends, you know, passing out leaflets and stuff, and my Uncle Richard was always there organizing with my dad. So we, both our families grew up together.
Was there a special bond between your dad and your Uncle Richard?
I think there was. I think he's got two other brothers, and I think my Uncle Richard, because he was around and helped a lot, I think they developed a real close bond. And I think as kids, too, I think they're closer in age, so they spend a lot of time together.
Who are the people that were, the two or three people who you feel were the closest to your father?
During what time?
throughout his life. Who were the people that your dad trusted most?
Well, my mother would be the one that he probably trusted the most. And then maybe a couple of the board members. I know the last 10, 15 years, he got very close to Artie Rodriguez, who's now the president. They built a real close relationship, and I think he trusted Artie.
Early on in his life, he had a pretty close relationship to Fred Ross. Do you remember?
I remember Fred when we were living in San Jose. Oh gosh, I must have been around 4 then. And it was funny because the only way I would remember Fred is that here comes that tall man to come and take my dad away again. You know, it was like every time he came, my dad would leave. And of course, they traveled together and organized together. So it's, I always remembered Fred, the guy that would come and take my dad away. Then I got to know Fred a little better when he came to work with he came to work with us in the Oxnard, Santa Paula area when Artie was assigned there to work in the citrus. Fred came down and worked with Artie. In fact, Fred's with us for, several weeks off and on.
Were they close? Were your dad and Fred Ross?
Oh, yeah, close? Very close, yeah.
Why do you think they were so close?
I guess because they spent so much time together and he worked with my dad and taught my dad organizing, you know. And then, I guess just over the years, they kept in touch and stuff, you know. When my dad would go through some hard times, I know it was Fred that he would call and stuff.
The new generation, your kids, how are they different? How is their life different from yours?
Growing up in the Union?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different than our lives. All we thought about was the Union, and that everything we did was based on the Union. And our kids seem to do a little more. I mean, they still work for the Union, and they're still active, and then they still have time for their social life. And, you know, I have a 17-year-old who's a perfect example. She works in Artie's office after school every day, and yet she has time to socialize with her friends and go to parties and proms and stuff. And then she's real active in the church. She's one of the team leaders at the church, and so she gets involved in a lot of stuff they do. So she kind of just spreads herself a lot, you know. She's the real organizer of the family.
Now, does your family, do you feel that your family is still carrying on like your dad did, where it's able to incorporate family and the Union and the movement?
My immediate family?
Your kids.
Oh, yeah, we do everything together, even... I guess it's the one thing my dad taught us, you know, is the work and the community we combine together. And that's what we do here in La Paz, too. Any activities that go on, we make a big deal of it. We just recently had a baptism where there was 5 kids that were baptized and one child made their communion. And the community got involved in it. And we had the church from Tehachapi, the priest came down and with the choir there. And so we made a big event of it. But yeah, we do. We try to incorporate that all the time. And everything we do.
Is there something that your dad has passed on to you? Something that you really feel is that one thing that keeps me going?
Well, it was his commitment.
What was it?
To serve others. you know, to...
I want you to incorporate my question. I mean, is there something that really keeps you going that your dad handed down to you?
Well, it was my dad's hard work, you know, and his commitment and his service, and taught us that we had to work for others, you know, that, that you know, like he did, you know. I don't really know how to explain it, but it was just something that over the years, just working with him and being with him, is that he taught us that, you know, you're here to service someone. You're here to work and help others, you know, and that's kind of what we do, and that's what, you know, I hope to give down to my children and to their children, you know, is that the commitment and the service for others.
One final thing. You mentioned earlier that your dad was a religious person. How did you go to church a lot, or what, was it a practical kind of religion? I mean, what was your perception of your father as a religious person?
Well, he was a very strong believer in Christ. He went to Mass regularly, and he, you know, expected us to go also. And everything was done, you know, through prayer. If we were going to have a big election, or if we were going to have a rally or anything we ever did, we always started off with a Mass, you know, and to get started. And he just, I don't know, it was just one of those things that he just, his faith in Christ, you know, and he believed strongly in faith, you know, and I think that's why he was so involved with the church. And that's why, I guess, we're that way, you know, because of the way we've seen that my dad brought us up, and I'm the same way with my children. But he just had a very strong faith.
What kept your dad going?
Gosh, I don't know. I really don't know, because I know there are times that really get tough, and you think, you know, about the work you're doing and stuff, but... That's funny, they're looking at my mom's house.
Morning.
Marker, camera roll 5, sound roll 3, take 7.
What do you think it was with your father that kept him going? What gave him that drive?
Gosh, I don't know what it was that kept my dad going. I just know the commitment he had for the farm workers, you know, and to service others. But, you know, I think it was his faith. I think my mom had a lot to do with it. I think, you know, her encouragement and her support, I think that helped him. But honestly can't say, you know, like deep down inside what it was. I really don't know.
Do you think anybody knows?
Maybe my mom. Maybe my mom does, but she doesn't. She doesn't do interviews.
Why doesn't she do interviews?
I don't know. She's always had this thing about the press. She just, I guess, too many negative things. She says that she once said that she would never do an interview because they won't. They'll print what they want, or they'll say what they want. And so she just never does them. Not very often will she. She'll go accept awards and stuff as long as she doesn't have to say anything. But to get up and speak and stuff, she doesn't do that. She'll thank people and, you know, say a few words. But as a public speaker or to do interviews, she just doesn't do it.
I can understand that. Thank you. Anything else, guys?
Keep the tape rolling. We're out of food. I guess the last question I have, I don't want you to put words in your mother's mouth, but what do you think, I know everybody around here has talked about this film, what do you think she would want, what picture of your father do you think she would want to come out of the film? What do you think she thinks is important?
My wife or film?
No, I just thought
it. Well...
I remember she told me some stuff when we met at the board meeting around a year ago about getting the thing started and how we worked and so forth. And she seemed to have some issues that were really important.
Yeah, she'll speak up at the board meetings and stuff because it's, you know, people that she knows and stuff. But
yeah.
Have you tried to meet with her while you were here?
Well, we'll talk, but I don't want to impose on her in terms of interview.
Yeah, she won't do an interview.
No.
But... She might sit with you for a minute or two. talk.
Okay. Let's maybe if you would you talk to her and
sure.
see if she'd just talk to us just to make sure.
Are you going
to
be here all day?
We'll
or?
Be here today, tomorrow, and Saturday. So.
Oh,
Saturday
you're
going
to. Oh, okay. What? Today's Thursday, right?
Today, Friday, and Saturday. Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't even remember what she said at the board meeting, but I remember that she had some real strong ideas about it. I would like.
I don't remember either. I don't remember it coming up.
I don't think this film's going to make everyone happy, but I would like your mom to feel happy with it. If anybody's
yeah. Well, let's talk to her to make sure she
gets those books. This was a. Oh, no, that's all. Yeah,
that was
good.
It?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
You're
welcome. Now we just to make sure we take the wire off.
Are you rolling?
Rolling.
Camera roll 6, sound roll 3, take 1.
Peter, when you first came over in 1931, what was it like for a young Filipino like you to come over and start working in the United States?
Great. This country is new to me. It is very much different from my own country. So the change make me sort of very much alive and enjoyed being here.
How long were you here before?
Take 2.
What was it like when you started working in agriculture in the fields? What was that like for you?
I think it was great because I have been to the countries where I saw some people suffering from lack of food. Like all the countries I have been to, Casablanca, Sicily, Italy, France, and Germany, all those countries were lacking of food. So I thought that being in agriculture, I could be contributing to help feed the hungry.
But when you came over.
Sorry.
Stop?
Yeah.
Camera roll 6, take 3.
Tell me what you remember of September 8th, 1965. What happened then?
September 8th, 1965. That is when about 1,500 Filipinos went on strike against the grape growers in Delano. And it was a wonderful day because we have a very good response to strikers against the grape growers. In my place, I didn't start the strike until about noon hour. That was a deadline that I have decided to do. At noon hour, you see, we work in the morning and we pick grapes. What we did is pick the ripe grapes and trim it and then put them down under the vine and so on. Keep on down and then move on to the next vine and do the same thing. And at noon hour, there are a lot of picked grapes under the vines, and that is when we quit and went home.
So, were you involved in organizing this first strike in 65?
No, I was not involved. Larry Itleong came to my camp. I was assistant foreman in my camp then. He came over to my camp, and that's the first time I met Larry. Introduced himself, introduced myself, and he told me that he is organizing a union under AWOC, Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee. And the reason he is organizing Filipinos to go on strike is because we needed to have better wages. At the time, we were just receiving $1.10 an hour, and his demand was $1.40 an hour and 25 cents per pick, pack, box brought to the avenue, from the middle of the row to the avenue. And that's, we asked for 25 cents. They only paid us 5 cents to do that.
And so when did Caesar and the Mexicans join you?
September 16, 1965. That is when he and his members, some 2,000 Mexican members and volunteers joined with our strike. And it was great. It's a lot of people.
So what happened when the Mexicans and the Filipinos joined up? What happened?
Well, we joined our membership to go out in the field and strike in the ranches from which we have gone out on strike against. And it's a big crowd, and the highway patrolmen, it seems to me that they have connection with the growers, because where we were thinking of going to go on picket, put our picket line, they knew we were coming to that ranch, so we suspected that they have used the two-way radio to contact the grower.
When did you first hear about, or when did you first meet Cesar Chavez?
Strange how I met him. I met him after they have joined with the Filipino strikers.
Could you say I met Cesar?
I met Cesar in the Filipino community hall. He was talking with another Filipino at the entrance of the community hall, and the entrance is so narrow that you have to ask permission to pass in between people who might be conversing right there at the entrance. So when he was, these two men were talking to each other, I asked permission, "Excuse me, please." Then I passed in between them. And a few steps past them, I heard a mellow voice saying, "Hello, brother." I stopped, looked back, and then walked back to shake hands with this Mexican who was talking to a Filipino, and said, "Cesar Chavez." And I introduced myself, Pete Velasco. "Glad to meet you." That is how we met. Ever since that time, we have been calling each other brothers, up to the end.
Now tell me the story about when you got sick with cancer. What did Caesar do?
In January 1992, I was diagnosed as having a colon cancer in my colon, and while I was there, waiting for this surgery. Cesar Chavez and Father Salandini, who is a good companion of his, came to visit me. And he visited me twice while I was there in the hospital. And the second time he came to visit me, Father Salandini was with him again. And he said to me, "Peter, when you are clean and get out of this hospital, I will teach you and Dolores how to cook macrobiotic food." And Brother Caesar, I said to him, "I am clean now. They have not fed me for 52 hours. So I am clean now." "No, Peter, not that way. When you get out, there is no meat, you don't eat meat, you don't drink hard alcohol or wine, and you eat mostly vegetables and product of soybeans. Those are practically all the food that you and Dolores would eat."
So did it cure you?
I think, I say this time and again, that I think that it cured me, because I am alive up to this point. It's 1992, 93, 94, now it's 95. So I think I am on the road to recovery.
Camera roll 7, sound roll 3, take 4.
Now, Pete, I'm going to ask you, I have to ask you that question again about, were you cured? Did he cure you?
I believe so. But there is a spot in my lung again, and suspected that a nude may have caused that spot in my lung. I think I am cured of my current surgery, because last month I had a CAT scan taken, and the report was good. So they did not find any spot or any trace of cancer right there in my interior.
Now, when Filipinos and the Mexicans got together, did you all get along pretty well? Or was there tension and tough?
Some did not make it easy to be with Mexican. But for me, it is a joy to have some Mexicans working with us, because to go on strike, you just don't go on strike all by yourself, because Filipinos have failed in lots of strikes. Because when Filipinos struck in the past, it's only Filipino strike. And what do you think, that there are Mexicans, there are whites, and there are blacks, and if you don't involve all the others to be with you, you are sunk, you fail. Because those nationalities that are not involved become your scabs, and they break your strike. So I think the merger of the Mexicans and Filipinos is a great thing.
Tell me the story of the pilgrimage to Sacramento. What do you remember of that?
The pilgrimage to Sacramento was a great event, because some 10,000 people assembled right there in the Capitol Hill. in front of the Capitol Hill. And the pilgrimage started with just a few of us, you know. And I remember me, I was already raising funds in Berkeley at the time. What I did is, I have a jacket, I pin buttons all over my jacket, in the back and the front, etc. And for me to sell to donors who are interested to get some buttons. And that I remember that very clearly, because it was a heavy load after all those buttons have been pinned down in my jacket.
Now, you were born in the Philippines, grew up part of your life in the Philippines. What made you come over here? What made you come over, and what was it like when you arrived here?
My intention was to further my studies. You see, right as soon as I finished, I graduated from high school, I told my father and mother, Dad, Mom, I'm going to the United States. And I'm going to follow my cousin who came here 1927. That was April 1931 when I came to America. And my father and mother said, oh no, we don't want you to go to the United States. We want you to go to, we want to send you to military school. You see, my father was so interested in sending me to military school because he wants me to be a military personnel, you know. And besides, he said, you have beautiful legs, and if you put those straps around your leg, it will look beautiful. Can you imagine that kind of thought? But I said, no, Dad. I want to go to the United States. So what you are going to spend for me to go to the military school, please use it, give it to me for my transportation to go to the United States. So we were poor, and money, so much money to for my transportation, that's too much to give right now, you know, because I want it now. And so we have about five or 10 hectares of land. So what they did is they mortgaged some of our land to give me some money. And I made sure that all the costs that they have used to mortgage the land, I have repaid all those from here.
I just got the tail end of that, sir.
Okay. All right. We've gone over all of these.
That muscle stuff.
Yeah.
Rolling.
Camera roll 7, sound roll 3, take 5.
So now that Caesar's gone, what is the legacy? What should we remember?
That he is gone. A million and one things. You know, Caesar, to me, was a gift to the farm workers and to all peoples. To me, he was a gift. You see, he is out of this world. I have worked with Caesar all along since the time I became a board member in 1970. And he had taught us how to walk in the jungle. He had taken us by the hand and show us how to walk in the jungle and not be afraid. And he had taught us not to be afraid. He had taught us to maintain dignity, because to us, the growers look at us just like dirt, and he didn't like that. You have to maintain dignity by acting like a first-class citizen, because you are a first-class citizen, he said. And his legacy is something that revived the spirit in all farm workers. You see, the spirit of the union has somehow just become stagnant, like, but the force of the great boycott was still going on, okay? But is that okay?
Yes.
And so when he passed away, you see, some 3,000 people attended his funeral. 3,000 people. Never have I seen any funeral attendance as much as we had when he passed away. And all these 3,000 people are the ones that have received the legacy that he had left us. And spirit within everyone of us has become renewed, just like new all over again, just like the spirit of 1965 has come back to life. And that was a beautiful legacy that we received from our brother Cesar Chavez.
Very eloquent.